So it's Sunday morning, it's Fox and Friends. It's 12:30 UK time, 7:30 US time, Fox and Friends. Very popular show. A favourite of the President, of course, who watches it. And I am going to be asked today really about what is the response in Europe and around the world to the proposed meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un from North Korea. And the answer, of course, is that those on the real committed hard left, I mean, even if he found a cure for cancer, they'd find some reason to criticise him. And they're saying it's a blunder. He's playing into the hands of the North Korean dictator. He'll raise his profile. But actually, my impression is, and backed up, actually, by quite a lot of what's been written, is that a lot of the reservations people had about Trump were more about his style. They saw him as being very brash, very out there. Well, of course he is. He's a New Yorker. You know, a lot of people from New York are like that. And I think a lot of middle ground people are saying, wow, this is really interesting, because previous presidents have talked about these meetings and they've never, ever happened. And the point about Trump, he makes things happen.
We're going to bring in now Nigel Farage, former UK Independence Party leader and Fox News contributor.
When months ago Donald Trump started giving out the nicknames and Rocket Man and tweeting and saying before the TV cameras, you're going to get fire and fury if you go after Guam or any piece of America. The mainstream media here in the U.S. and some around the world said this is absurd. He's going to start World War III. To your point, that doesn't look like it. Now look at these headlines. New York Times, word of Trump Kim summit meeting stirs concern in Asia. BBC, Trump and North Korea talks, the political gamble of the 21st century. And CNN, finally, the week Trump rewarded enemies and punished friends. Before it was he starting World War III. Now he's trying to get to the peace table and they're still not happy.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I'm old enough to remember Ronald Reagan. And all those same newspapers, all those same media outlets saying Reagan was an idiot, he wasn't fit to be US president. And then the big Reykjavik summit that he had with Soviet Russia, Star Wars, America winning the Cold War, the Berlin Wall coming down, tens of millions of people living in freedom, liberty and democracy. And still, those media organisations would never credit Ronald Reagan with anything. And I think right now, if Donald Trump, you know, invented a cure for the common cold, they would still find a reason to criticise him. So that was my appearance on Fox and Friends Sunday morning in London. On Monday, I hot-footed it to the European Parliament in Strasbourg, where I had a busy week ahead. Tuesday morning was a big day because, as group leader, I got to speak in the main debate. And there was one subject I could not resist speaking on: the future relationship between the UK and the EU. This was just before I went into the chamber. It's Tuesday, the 13th of March, 8:30 in the morning. I'm off to meet Mr. Juncker now, and of course that lovely Mr. Barnier. We've got, in 9 days' time, big summit that Theresa May is going to be at, all the European leaders will be at, and the big topic is going to be transition. You know, what kind of transition deal does Britain get, which in a sense is continued membership without any say. So it'll be interesting. I think what we're going to get this morning is a lot of people talking about they don't want the UK cherry picking. That's the sort of term that is being used here all the time. I also expect to hear a bit of criticism of President Trump because he's put tariffs in place on aluminium and steel, and they're all outraged by that, despite the fact they themselves already have put tariffs on aluminium and steel and 13,000 other products, including, for example, things like mastectomy bras, which people buy in from places like China. They've got tariffs put on them. And we're kind of stuck here because if we go for transition, we stay part of the customs union for 2 years. If Mr. Corbyn becomes prime minister, we stay part of the customs union forever. And my argument is we're piggy in the middle here. We could do a deal with Trump and America on these products within 48 hours of that. I've got no doubt at all. So my line really is to say, look, these bullies here in the European Union, Trump standing up to them, and I want Theresa May at the summit next week to stand up to them. No doubt it'll go down in the chamber like a lead balloon.
Because in this USA dispute, we now find ourselves trapped, impotent, unable to act. We need to be free. We voted Brexit. We voted to make our own trade policy, our own trade decisions. We could do a deal with America in 48 hours. We need to act. Yes, well, just yesterday, the Trump administration were describing us as their best ally in the world.
It's Wednesday morning, I'm still in Strasbourg, and I bump into a very controversial figure. Well, a breaking news story over the last few days are three activists who, some who tried to get into the UK and were barred, others who got in and were detained, and they're being accused of racism, and in one case, Schedule 7 of the Prevention of Terrorism Act has been used. So let's try and get to the bottom of this story. And joining me now is Canadian right-wing activist, blogger and author Lauren Southern. Lauren, you tried to come into the UK through Calais. Tell us what happened.
Correct. Thank you so much for having me, Nigel. I came in on Sunday night and my passport seemed to be flagged. And they took me into the back, put me in detention, and I thought it was just going to be a regular detention, but soon enough, the Kent police showed up with a form that said Schedule 7 Terrorism Act on it. They told me, you are now being detained by the police under the Terrorism Act. You do not have a right to remain silent. We are going to be questioning you about your goings-ons, your ideology. They even asked me questions about what I think of running over Muslims with cars. It was one of the most bizarre experiences of my life. And by the end of it, I discovered I was banned from the United Kingdom for allegedly being racist.
Is that a temporary ban? Is that a permanent ban?
I asked them when I was in there, and it appears to be a permanent ban.
Well, there aren't many people that get banned for life, so we perhaps better try and find out what their thinking was. Now, your last visit, as I understand it, to the United Kingdom was in February, and you were in Luton giving out leaflets in the High Street. And I've got one of the documents here from the police, and it says that, Lauren Southern, by your own admission, you were distributing racist material in Luton. Is that right?
What's bizarre is even if I did not admit to giving out racist material, because that would almost be a lie to the police. There is nothing racist about what was on those leaflets. I spoke about the LGBT community and about Islam. Neither of those things have anything to do with race. So not only did I not admit to this, but what I assume is I said, yes, I was handing out leaflets in Luton, and they simply decided they were racist.
Now, looking at the pictures here of a sunny day in Luton, and there you are, and the poster I'm looking at says, Allah is a gay god. What was that supposed to mean?
So people think I was simply trying to make fun of Islam, which is not the case. In fact, the social experiment was based off of a Vice article claiming Jesus Christ was a gay man and questioning whether he was gay. And I figured, let's see how people would react if we did this with other faiths. And we pretended to be left-wing LGBT activists saying Allah is a god for gays as well. And of course, the police showed up and told us people were offended, therefore we need to hand over all our leaflets. And I guess I figured out the end of my social experiment is if you say Allah is a gay god under UK blasphemy laws, you get banned from the country and brought in under Schedule 7.
Well, in theory, we don't have blasphemy laws, but we do have very strict law. But we do have very strict laws on racism. We have strict laws on incitement. And of course, you know, that has to be measured against free speech. I'm really keen for you to tell us, you know, how exactly do you see the religion of Islam and how it interfaces with communities in the West?
I think that there are aspects of Islam, at least within how it is practiced within the majority of the world and in some governments within the Middle East, that are incompatible with Western society. And if we want to live in a society that has women's rights, that has the right to free speech, that has the right to criticize religion, or even the right to simply be a homosexual, then we need to ask some serious questions about whether or not certain aspects of Islam are compatible with that. I am not an extremist. I do not hate Muslims, but I think these are questions that need to be asked.
Yeah, I mean, the Muslim population living in the United Kingdom, and it's one that's growing very, very quickly indeed, but it is important for everyone listening to this to understand that they all came to the United Kingdom legally. Mm-hmm. There were people like me questioning immigration levels into Britain, but everybody that came into the country was here, is here, legally. I mean, in your view, you know, are you happy for them to practice their religion, to worship, for mosques to exist on our streets?
If you do things peacefully. I am completely in favor of you being in the country. I think that there is a question of how much immigration and how quickly, certainly, and assimilation. However, if you agree with the United Kingdom laws, you follow them, you come in legally, I see no problem with this.
The other big issue that is really dividing European politics dramatically, and I think many would think influenced the Brexit result, were the scenes from 2015 onwards of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people coming across the Mediterranean and claiming asylum. Now, I've got myself into hot water by pointing out that if you look at the photographs, actually 75% of them are males under the age of 30. You know, where are the women? Where are the children? Where are the disabled people? So I've had a big issue with this, saying that I don't believe that in many cases these people would ever qualify under the, you know, UN definitions of being refugees. And the kind of, I think that there's almost an acceptance of that now, even in these buildings here in the European Union institutions. But thousands of people, no one knows quite how many, but somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 people have drowned on these crossings over the sea. Tell us about your involvement with an organization trying to stop these crossings.
Right. So I went and covered and to an extent supported a group that called their mission Defend Europe, in which they intended on going out and investigating the Mediterranean border crossings that were supported by NGOs. The Italian government at the same time was investigating these NGO boats as colluding with human traffickers, and they found evidence of this as well. Of course, these are not refugees according to the UN's own statistics, who have found the majority are coming over for economic reasons. The majority are not coming from nations that where people would be given refugee status. So while people find the Defend Europe mission controversial because they went out to challenge these NGO boats and to sink the rafts that were not being used so that they could not be used again by traffickers, they were challenging truly illegal immigration into the country and also collusion with traffickers that has been documented.
Yeah, okay. I mean, this is not just your criticism. Indeed, I think one of the reasons that the Italian elections have produced the result they have is one of the arguments is that actually the NGOs have almost been working with the traffickers to get people into Italy, Greece, and elsewhere. But you can see why it's controversial, this stuff. You can see why. But you can see why people would say, well, actually, you know, what she was doing was working with a group of people who were further endangering the lives of these poor refugees.
Well, if you read the mainstream media, you would certainly believe that. I mean, in one case, I lit a flare that was meant to light up a boat that we were on so we could take pictures. And that was reported by the mainstream media as me shooting a flare gun at a ship full of migrants. Not only was this completely false, the ship had no migrants in it. I did not shoot a flare gun, I lit a flare. So if you read the mainstream media, you will certainly think I am all sorts of horrible things. But the reality is, I am simply an individual who questions illegal migration. Now, I've also had the BBC and many verified journalists gloat at my banning from the UK, saying, oh, you know how it feels like now. I would never support the banning of someone trying to come into the nation legally, whether they were a Muslim, whether they were North African, any of that. I am against the illegal entering of people into nations.
How big are these debates in Canada? I mean, is Canada going through? In Europe, clearly, identity, culture, you know, these, and whether you're in the north or the south or the east of Europe, these are now the big debates. Do you see that same debate happening in Canada? And if you make these arguments in Canada, you know, do you get the same kind of venom that you're getting from some in Europe?
I believe that Canada and America, to an extent, are 10 years behind what happens in Europe. Of course, our debates are not as urgent as Europe because we are not bordered, or we don't have our land masses connected to places like the Middle East where people can walk over. We have to have them flown in, which creates a far more rigorous process of looking into their backgrounds. However, I think all over the world, these debates of how is this mass immigration without assimilation going to result in years to come? How is this crisis with cultures and the clash of cultures going to manifest itself? Has our have our Western nations become so generous with strangers that they are now unsustainable for ourselves? It's a debate that we can avoid it as long as we want now, but it will eventually, we will be forced to acknowledge it in the coming years when it becomes a far bigger crisis.
What is it that motivates you? I mean, many would say, well, she's clearly gives her whole life to this, to activism, to campaigning for right-wing causes. What is it that motivates you? Is it a strong Christian belief? I mean, what is it that drives you?
I unfortunately believe that my generation is being led to the slaughter blindly, and of course I use that as a metaphor, not the literal slaughter, but they're being led down a path that is going to deny them and their children free speech and the ability to question their governments. They're being led down a path that will lead them to poverty if the welfare state continues to expand to points where it is unsustainable. They're being led down a path that will lead them to unhappiness with things like radical feminism, making the genders hate each other and just be vitriolic towards each other. And all of these things are not leading to happy, well-functioning societies. And the mainstream media is not telling people what the results of this are going to be in the years to come. And some people must speak up for my generation and at the very least give them the opportunity to reject conservative ideas, because in most cases they don't even get to hear them.
What I was getting to was sort of the root of this. I mean, there are some around Europe who stand up for what they see as Judeo-Christian culture. Mm-hmm. But there are some that do it in such a way that they give the impression that they actually hate Islam. Would you say you hate Islam or just aspects of it?
I would hate aspects of it, I believe. And I don't like right-wing positions being identified as hateful. I far prefer them being seen as a love for one's own culture, one's own language, one's own history. I love what Western liberal democracies have produced in the form of freedom, in the form of our rights, and I think that should be preserved. That does not mean I hate Muslims. That does not mean I hate Islam. I think there are aspects of the Quran that are incompatible with my society and the freedoms that I value. And I am willing to question that, and I am willing to maybe even be a little too cheeky or out there in order to question it. But it's not about hate. This is about love for one's own culture.
Now, maybe you weren't really the target of these police operations that took place last weekend, because you were one of three, part of a group called Generation Identity, and they kind of came to fame in Britain by putting a big banner over Westminster Bridge, which was seen to be an anti-Islamic banner. And there was an Austrian called Martin Sellner who was involved with this. You know, I've watched some documentary videos of things that Martin Sellner said that I don't think were designed to be seen in public, but they were. I mean, have you seen some of those comments that Sellner has made?
I briefly watched an ITV documentary. I you would have to remind me of the exact statements that Sellner made.
Well, I mean, generally, they were derogatory statements about other cultures and other faiths. And they were said, as I say, this was picked up by a secret camera in a room. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, are you comfortable with Generation Identity and Sellner as an organization and as one of its main leaders?
I think that we need to be critical. I know Sellner personally, and I've had personal talks with him about his whether he is radical and such. And he is in our conversations, he has told me, no, this is not about hating other people. No, I do not hold some of the beliefs that people have accused me of in the past. And I'd like to think I'm a good judge of his character, but I could always be wrong. Now, has Generation Identity made mistakes? Have many groups that are political activists gone too far here and there? Absolutely, and we should be critical and we should question. But I find that there is a far closer eye and criticism on anything that is remotely right-wing in the UK when you have so many organizations that are doing far worse, that are being funded by terrorist organizations, that are screaming for the death of Western culture and the beheading of non-Muslims. And you have the press turn a blind eye. I mean, look what happened in Telford. The press isn't even covering this, where they're covering the off-camera comments of one young Austrian man. I think the priorities here are a little absurd.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I'm going to come back to Telford myself in a moment, and the timing of all of this, which is very interesting, because, you know, you were prevented coming into the UK just 48 hours before the Telford story broke. Telford, which may well be the worst sexual scandal yet that we've seen in the United Kingdom, just given the sheer number of underage girls involved. So, I mean, you know, Telford clearly is a big issue. There are failures of multiculturalism as sponsored by the state over the last three or four decades. But I think in this interview, we've got to the bottom of your philosophy. But hey, here we are. You have had Schedule 7 of the Prevention of Terrorism Act applied to you. You are banned from coming to the United Kingdom for life. Do you have any appeal against this?
I'm going to try to challenge this, absolutely. I have a recording, actually, when the Kent police called my father, and the Kent police are absolutely lovely people, I will say. I think this came from above and not because they actually thought I was a terrorist. They called my father and told him, your daughter is being held under the Terrorism Act, which I'm putting so many gray hairs on my parents' head, unfortunately. And they also said, we do not believe your daughter is a terrorist. We have no reason to believe she is a terrorist. So it seems that they abused Schedule 7. It seems that it was not used properly. And after speaking with legal counsel, many of the steps that should have been taken in my detainment were not. And it seems I will have an opportunity to appeal this.
Well, that was Lauren Southern, banned under the Prevention of Terrorism Act from coming into the United Kingdom, which I have to say, from my own perspective, I find a bit ironic, given that 400 people who left my country and went to fight for ISIS have been allowed to come back into the country and roam the streets freely. And whether you find Lauren's arguments and her thoughts, whether you find them the right ideas, or whether they perhaps discomfort you a little bit, we do live in a society where people should be able to speak freely, provided that does not incite hatred of others. And I have to say, from my own perspective, I think Schedule 7 being used in this case of the Prevention of Terrorism Act is a total abuse of power. And this has nothing to do, as Lauren said, with the Kent Police. This goes all the way to the top of the British government. And I just get this feeling that they are so embarrassed, so frightened of the implications of this huge sexual grooming scandal of underage girls in Telford, they're trying to close down debate. And it simply can't be allowed to happen. So that was my interview with Canadian Lauren Southern. And before you attack me for using this podcast to give a platform to right-wing views only, I can assure you we will be using Farage Against the Machine to speak to controversial characters from across the entire political platform. We want you to listen to all points of view and to make your own minds up. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Farage Against the Machine.